Welcome to Film Broad C, a podcast for women who want to learn how to write and produce a film they love. If you're a newbie writer or filmmaker, or an actress who's tired of auditions for one-dimensional roles, if you're overseeing yet another badly written script from a mediocre white man and you want to do something about it, you're in the right place. Get inspired by the pioneering women of the golden age of Hollywood through to today's changemakers and disruptors with practical how-tos to finally write and produce your damn script already. I'm your host, Emily Grace. Welcome to the show. Welcome to episode 12. This is the penultimate episode of season one of Film Bronze, and we have so much to cover. I can't wait to share this episode with you. So here are some quick updates on my short film Pigeon. Our official crowdfunding campaign will begin mid-May is what it's starting to look like. So start putting that latte money away because I will be asking you for a contribution to this film that is so close to my heart. And every single dollar on a film of this size counts. And guess what? Katie Mancuso is on board to produce and assistant direct. So the Pigeon creative team is coming along behind the scenes. I hope that I'm going to have some more announcements about the rest of the creative team very soon. And this will be my second of many projects with Katie. I have absolutely no doubt about that. Like many of the stories I've shared on this podcast, the women of old Hollywood, like Mary Pickford and Frances Marion, who worked with a small group of people again and again, once you meet collaborators you trust and know you work well with, of course you want to keep working with them whenever possible. And Katie's film Shadow Work is with the editor as we speak. That first cut is coming together, and I cannot wait to see that first cut. So stay tuned. There's so much more to come. And because you're so smart and you listen to this podcast, you are going to be the first to know about it. So this episode is where all the pieces start to come together. It's the final step of your prep work, and it is a big episode. So I recommend that you download this episode because you're going to want to revisit it probably multiple times. Remember that season one of this podcast is in this order for a reason. And if you haven't listened to the rest of the season yet, this episode will make a lot more sense once you do. The last step in this process before you start scripting is to create your outline. And your outline is based on a three-act structure, which is the same exact structure for both short film and for feature film. Now, if we're talking TV pilots, they're going to have a different act structure. And the purpose of a TV pilot is very different from the purpose of a film. So this season, we are focused on short film act structure, which again is the same as feature film. But the act structure that we're covering today is not what you would use for a TV pilot, just to be clear about that. So let's get going. Get some tea, get your earphones in if you're taking a walk while you listen, and let's dive right in. This show is sponsored by Write Your Short. If you want to write and produce a script that you love, but you don't know how to get started, go to writeyourshort.com. Don't create in a vacuum or try to figure this out all by yourself. Learn how to write a festival-worthy script you can produce or star in or direct or wear all those hats at once. With writeyourshort.com, you can get the exact next steps you need to take based on where you're at in the process. No guesswork, self-doubt, or overwhelm. Just a proven process to make the most powerful film possible. That's writeyourshort.com. And now, back to the show. What is three-act structure? This is the tool that turns your idea into a screenplay. It organizes your story into a compelling narrative that keeps your audience engaged. Now, in the most basic sense, your three-act structure has a beginning, middle, and end. Thanks for listening. That's the end of the podcast. Just kidding. It's a little bit more complex than that. Each of these acts has a specific purpose, and when you understand the story elements that should be in each act, it makes your life as a writer a lot easier. So I want to go through the elements of each act And I have a really special gift I put together for you as a companion to this episode. It's a video from my paid program, the Short Film Lab, where you can watch me analyze the act structure of an amazing short film. And you also get to watch the short film along with me at the same time. I find it helps me learn these tools so much faster when I can see them in action. And I imagine it's probably the same for you too. So this video is my gift to you as a thank you for being a podcast listener so that you can become a master of three-act structure. Now, usually this video is only available in my paid program, but it's a free gift to you. And you can grab that over at writeyourshort.com. Look for the three-act structure bonus video. So how do you structure act one of your screenplay? Well, let's look at this through the lens of The Devil Wears Prada, so we're keeping our example consistent all season long. And today I'm going to cover act structure through the lens of our protagonist. This is the character who's driving this story forward, so they are intrinsically tied to act structure, and they're also the character that goes through the most change. So this is the Andy or Andrea Sachs character played by Anne Hathaway in The Devil Wears Prada. And let's refresh our character development tool that you learned about back in episode 3. So Andy's external want is work a year at Runway Magazine. Her superpower is determination. The fatal flaw is insecurity, and the inner need is to embrace her authentic self. Guess what? These elements that you've already talked about directly tie into three-act structure. It's such a beautiful character development tool that pays off dividends when you set this up properly back in episode 3 and episode 6. So how do these tie in directly to structure? Well, by the end of act 1, we will firmly establish Andy's external want and her superpower. And by the end of act 3, she will overcome her fatal flaw to get her inner need. So the structure of this film is directly tied to the character development that you already did. I told you these episodes are in this order for a reason. So let's dive into Act 1 of The Devil Wears Prada. Here are the story elements that appear in your Act 1. Now, if you've listened to the episode about anatomy of a scene, you're going to start to see similarities here. Another beautiful part of this writing process is you have such a firm grasp of this foundation already from the work you've already done up until now. Your Act 1 is going to do a lot of heavy lifting. It's going to introduce your characters, especially the most important one, your protagonist. It's also going to establish the status quo. What is life like? What's normal life like at the beginning of this story? It will also have the inciting incident that sets your story in motion. And by the end of Act 1, you will firmly establish your protagonist's external want and their superpower, right? So in this film, the external want and superpower gets established very quickly. It's like within the first 10 minutes. It doesn't always come that quickly, but it does need to be there by the end of Act 1. Your Act 1 will also establish the central question that this story explores and what's at stake for your protagonist if they don't get their external want. So in The Devil Wears Prada, Andy's status quo is she's a broke college graduate who needs a job. She has a boyfriend. She has a handful of friends who are all struggling to get a foothold in their professional careers. She's a super low maintenance person who really wants to be a journalist who can make a difference in the world, but she's looking for a job in the meantime to get by because she's got bills to pay. One of the first things we see Andy do is go on this job interview where she meets the antagonist, Miranda Priestly. Now, this scene, this is the interview scene that we've discussed in a previous episode. This scene firmly establishes both Andrea's superpower of determination and her fatal flaw of insecurity, which as a character, Andy's not aware of her fatal flaw or her inner need on a conscious level. But you as the writer are. So this job interview goes terribly. But Andy uses that determination to advocate for herself. It leads to Miranda being impressed and Andy gets hired. This job offer is our inciting incident that kicks off this story. If she didn't get that job, we wouldn't have a film. So now our story is set in motion by this inciting incident. The rest of Act One enriches the world of high fashion in New York City, the cutthroat workplace that is Runway Magazine. It shows us and Andy how badly equipped she is for this job. She tries to jump through all Miranda's impossible hoops, but she's failing pretty spectacularly. It also establishes she really does not fit in here. This is a fish out of water story. Now, after a major faux pas on Andy's part, which results in that scene, it isn't blue or turquoise or lapis, it's cerulean, if you remember that classic scene. Andy makes the firm decision. She is going to stay a year at Runway because of the doors that will open up to her. She's not going to let Miranda get to her. This decision on Andy's part, see, she is a protagonist making decisions. She's driving the story. It's not just like things happen to her and she's very passive. She makes a firm, clear decision. I'm not going to give up. I'm going to stay at this job. I'm going to last a year. This turning point firmly establishes both the external want of Andy, our protagonist, and it also establishes the central question. So these two things are intrinsically tied together. Will Andy last a year at Runway Magazine, or will Miranda just destroy this naive young woman? That's essentially the central question. Now, disclaimer, I didn't write this film, so I'm just basing this analysis on what I can point to as evidence in the film. The writer may have been working with something else, but for our purposes, we just want to do our best to analyze based on evidence that we can point to. Now, this Act One also establishes what's at stake here if Andy fails to last a year at Runway Magazine. Well, not only will she be out of a job, her professional reputation is at stake now. Miranda is incredibly influential and well-connected, and she's not exactly a nice person. She could do a lot of damage to Andy if she wanted to. So the stakes for Andy are pretty high. So after our Act One turning point, now we are off and running into Act Two. So what story elements happen in your Act Two? You will create escalating obstacles or conflict in the way of your protagonist's goal. You will have what's called a midpoint. This is typically right in the middle of your entire film when your protagonist has a new realization that either reinforces the tactics they use to get their external want or they reverse course altogether. And if you are doing analysis on your own and you can't quite figure out where the midpoint is, just look at the time signature. 9 out of 10 times, it's literally right in the middle of the film. Your Act Two will end with the Act Two turning point, which is the all is lost moment. This is when your protagonist is at their lowest or in the most danger, at least up until this point. If we're talking about like a Marvel or a war movie, they may become in more danger in Act Three, but it's the most danger or their lowest point up until this point in the story. In The Devil Wears Prada, Act Two is where the obstacles to Andy working a year at Runway begin to escalate. But Andy's superpower of determination has been fully activated, so she begins to better anticipate Miranda's impossible demands. Miranda's demands start to infiltrate Andy's personal life, and she becomes more entrenched in the office culture. She gets a makeover, she dresses in better clothes, right? She's no longer this low maintenance, bad bangs, corduroy wearing mess. But after Andy fails to book Miranda a flight during a hurricane, right, another impossible task that she fails at, Miranda gives her the most impossible task of all. She's demanding an advance copy of the Harry Potter book for her twins to read on their trip to Grandma's. There's a ticking clock here. It's pretty much set up for Andy to fail. Now, this leads us to our midpoint. Andy realizes she's not going to be able to pull this off, and Miranda's made it pretty clear that if she fails again, she will get fired. Now, at the same time, Andy's already on the verge of quitting. And then by some miracle, Andy leans on a colleague who probably has a crush on her, and he helps her actually be able to pull this off. So she not only pulls off the impossible task, this is the moment where she beats Miranda at her own game by anticipating all of the pitfalls Miranda has set out for her, right? Miranda's pissed at her. She wants a reason to fire her. So she's intentionally setting her up to fail. But because Andy's got that determination as her superpower, she's ahead of Miranda at her own game. So she ends up getting 3 copies of the Harry Potter book printed, bound, and printed, bound, and bookcased, for lack of a better term. So one of the copies she gives to Miranda, and the other 2 she has hand delivered to the train that the twins are already on so they can read the book on their trip to Grandma's. It's a mic drop moment for Andy, and her success at this impossible task shocks Miranda into speechlessness. We have never seen this character at a loss for words up until this point. So this moment is a huge turning point in the dynamic of this relationship. It is also our midpoint in terms of our structure. Andy uses new tactics to play Miranda's game at a much higher level than what she was doing before. And this reversal of her tactics will also help her work a year at Runway Magazine even more than what she was doing up until now. But these tactics come with a price. But we need to stick around to Act 3 to see if it's a price that Andy is willing to pay. So this midpoint gives Andy more status than she had before in her position. From here, we have our next story element, which is our Act 2 turning point. This is the all is lost moment when your protagonist is either at their lowest or in the most danger. So in Devil Wears Prada, the all is lost moment is when Andy's personal life implodes. At a gallery showing for her friend, the guy who helps her get the Harry Potter book just happens to be there. He openly flirts with her and makes a comment about how she owes him for the favor, and he also kisses her on the cheek. In public, her friend sees this, her friend who's also friends with her boyfriend, and her friend is pissed. She takes Andy to task for how much she's changed. She doesn't even recognize her friend anymore. And this confrontation is quickly followed by her essential breakup with her boyfriend. Her boyfriend questions Andy's integrity. He forces her to admit that they really have nothing in common anymore. And just as she's about to try to fix it, her phone rings, and now she has another choice: save her relationship or answer the phone to her boss. And of course, because this is the Devil Wears Prada, she chooses her boss. This is Andy's lowest moment so far. She is the furthest from her authentic self that she's ever been. Her relationship has just blown up. It's now ended. Her friends don't want anything to do with who she's become. And remember, right? This is a deal with the devil that she's made. The Devil Wears Prada is a big clue that Andy is slowly trading her values, if not her soul, for the couture and the status and all of these things that she's gaining from this job. Now, we might look at being decked out in couture and on your way to Paris Fashion Week and moving up the runway ladder, we might see them as positives, but Andy's deal with the devil is really starting to cost her a lot more than she bargained for. So now we move into Act 3. Your Act 3 story elements will include events that build to the climax. The climax itself, which is the moment when your protagonist overcomes their fatal flaw to get their inner need, and the resolution and the new status quo. What is life like now that your protagonist has gone on this journey? In The Devil Wears Prada, our Act 3 events that lead to the climax take place in Paris Fashion Week. Andy begins to get a glimpse of what's truly in store for her if she continues on this path. She gets an up-close, personal view of the backstabbing of the fashion industry. She can't ignore all the terrible behind-the-scenes things that she's seen go on. And directly after she sees Miranda essentially betray Miranda's most loyal employee, we arrive at our climax in the limo, where Miranda says she sees a great deal of herself in Andy. Andy realizes, oh fuck, I'm like a baby Miranda. This is the moment that she realizes she has traded in too much of herself and she doesn't want to be like Miranda. So again, she has a choice. Miranda in this limo essentially invites Andy into the inner circle of Miranda and Runway and people like Miranda. Now, instead of accepting this invitation, Andy uses that power, that superpower of determination, and instead she decides to quit. She leaves the limo, she throws her cell phone into a fountain, and she saunters away in her couture into the Paris horizon. This is the moment that she overcomes her fatal flaw of insecurity to get her inner need to embrace her authentic self. Now that Andy has made this monumental choice, we end with our resolution and our new status quo. Our resolution is essentially the answer to our central question. Will Andy work a year at Runway? Not quite. She doesn't quite make it to a full year. And our new status quo shows us now that she's embraced her authentic self again, Andy's going to be okay. She makes amends with her ex-boyfriend. They don't exactly get back together, but they seem to resolve things and be back on better terms, and maybe there's a door open to a future. She also gets a job as a journalist. This was the goal that she had in the beginning of the film, but she couldn't get hired as a journalist. So she's finally able to achieve this thanks to a backhanded compliment of a referral from Miranda. Miranda essentially, in her referral, says, "You're stupid if you don't hire her," insulting everyone. "She was by far my biggest disappointment, and you're stupid if you don't hire her." Now, we're not really looking at this outline from the perspective of the protagonist journey, but this moment is a clue that Miranda has gone through a small transformation. It's not going to be as big as Andy's, because Andy is our protagonist who automatically goes through the most change, but Miranda giving her a reference to help her get a job is evidence of Miranda's smaller transformation. And if you remember from episode 6, her inner need was meaningful connection. They have a moment of meaningful connection in that Paris hotel room when she confesses about her husband is divorcing her. And they're not going to be best friends now, but her willingness to actually give Andy a reference after she ditched her in the limo does show us she did have some kind of meaningful connection with Andy. So in the end of this film, Andy doesn't get what she wants. She doesn't last a year at Runway, but she ultimately gets what she needs. She's back to her authentic self. She's pursuing a career as a journalist. She's just more of who she started this film as, just with a lot more experience under her belt. Now, of course, a lot more happens in this script, but for the purposes of this podcast, these are the story elements of 3-act structure from the perspective of our protagonist, so you can see them in action. Now, this episode is a talk through of 3-act structure without actually being able to watch the film and analyze it together. If you want to see me analyze 3-act structure of a short film, and I really recommend that you do, it's going to be so illuminating and eye-opening for you, make sure you grab the companion video to this episode. You can get it at writeyourshort.com. Look for the 3-act structure bonus video. And again, this is a video from my paid program. Usually only my paying clients get to see it, but I'm gifting it to you as a thank you for being a podcast listener, and it's really going to help you master 3-act structure. When you understand structure, it's going to make you such a better writer. So now that you understand 3-act structure, do you jump into scripting? No, not quite. We're so close. There's just one more step in the process, and that is the outline. To create your outline, identify all the story elements you know you need to hit in your script. That's everything we just covered in this episode. And then you want to create an outline, which is essentially a blueprint of ideas and potential scenes and turning points that hit all of your story elements. Now, I've also included an outline for you to see what I mean in that bonus video. So when you grab the video that analyzes three-act structure of that short film, I've also put together a version of an outline so you can clearly see the difference between like the sketch blueprint of an outline versus what you would actually fill in when you get to scripting. So remember, you can grab that at writeyourshort.com. Now, personally, I like to outline my acts one at a time and then get feedback in between to make sure that my act structure makes sense and my story is building momentum before I get too far down the process. That's just how I like to do it. I outline act one and then I get feedback and make changes, then I go on to act two and so on. So now that you have three act story structure under your belt, it's time to get started on that outline. Thank you so much for listening and I'll see you next time. If you enjoyed the show, remember to subscribe and even better, leave a 5-star review. Ready to finally write and produce your damn script already? Go to writeyourshort.com to get started and connect with me on Instagram at @TheOnlyEmilyGrace. Your story matters, and who better to tell it than you? Stay tuned for the next episode, and I'll see you there.